Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of What's on the Other Side. Again, this is Max Schumacher filling in for Drake Jones. We are anxiously waiting his return, but we will keep you updated as to when that will be. Lots of fun stuff we're going to talk about tonight. Rodney is actually on the line now, so I will not waste any more time. Apologize for being late, and let's get him on the line. How's it going, Rodney?
Hey, what do you say there? I take it I'm coming through okay. How's it going?
Yep, hear you crystal clear, and everything is good. almost the weekend, halfway through, so happy that we're getting there. But I won't waste any more time. We'll go ahead and jump right into it. I know we talked about dreams last night. Unless, do you have anything you would like to bring up before we get going?
Well, I thought some of the subjects that we might cover tonight, maybe some listeners or callers might be interested in, you know, just the normal paranormal topics, you know, pineal gland, ley lines, remote viewing, dreams, you know, all kinds of things like that. And something that relate to each other a little bit and for the most part. But we did have a pretty good discussion on dreams the other night, which was kind of interesting. We didn't really get in depth and scientifically, but just in general, what it might mean for people and those who have vivid dreams as opposed to those who want to don't. I thought that was a good conversation. So, yeah, anything, I'm open for any kind of discussion on anything. So any news topics, we can get to those, I suppose, as well. I haven't had a real chance to delve into some stuff. You sent me a text earlier, and I got that. So interesting. But I think we should just kind of go forward and discuss whatever you might have lined up for us.
Yeah, right on. Didn't know if you had anything anxious to get. But, since we talked about dreams last time, I know Alex called in. We had a pretty good discussion. But I found this on Reddit under their paranormal Reddit. But one guy, this was posted a couple days ago by A-N-G-A-T-I-T-A. It's the guy's username that posted it. But he talking about dreams and this person had, I'll just go ahead and read it. They were asking for people's opinion on this dream and the scenario that they had. So this is their words, not mine, so I'll go ahead and start reading. So I've recently picked up yoga at school. The night after our very first practice, I had an extremely vivid dream. I normally have dreams that I can remember well, but this one was almost fully lucid. I was at a gas station in the car waiting for people I was with to come back from paying inside when a bunch of people started running and screaming. I hear a plane. Just hit another plane. And then seconds later, there were just gigantic hunks of flaming molten metal raining down all around me. Everyone was running for cover, screaming. It was just chaos. I just remember how hot it was and terrifying. The next day, I go to class. First time. I've never met this lady. And our professor begins telling us about her time working as a volunteer for the Red Cross. She began recounting a story of what made her quit nursing and become a teacher. She referenced the PSA 128 crash in 1978. I had no idea what this was since I just moved to the city a month ago and was born in the 90s. She continues her story. PSA 128 was a passenger jet that was struck midair by a secondary private jet. It went down over San Diego and landed in a residential area. Nobody on either plane survived. So, of course, by now I'm having flashbacks of my dream from that morning and started having a minor panic attack. When I got home, I started researching with the wind. My whole body froze when I saw this picture, read in the caption, blah, blah, blah. The article goes on, but they were referencing if anyone had ever had a dream that was related to a scenario, whether it happened to them or maybe someone around them and then had that experience in their dream be something that was actually real in real life. I personally have it, but people talk about they have dreams about getting in car wrecks and then someone they know gets in a wreck or they, you know, wreck their car or whatever it may be. I know we kind of briefly touched on the subjects of dreams being a way of warning you something or predicting something in the future. So I thought this one was kind of interesting that this person would have a dream about a plane crash and lives in the same area, and then their professor happens to have, you know, go on about this entire experience that basically the same thing their dream was.
Yeah, I find that interesting. There's a few points about the story that was kind of interesting, that he said that he had, like, had a anxiety about it or felt weird about it, and I thought that was kind of odd. I've had sort of dreams that have kind of come true before, so I didn't request them anything bad, but interesting that he, you know, sort of felt uncomfortable about it, sort of odd, and yoga and things like that. That seems to be a topic, another topic that people have been getting into, especially lately with just trying to deal with the normal everyday stresses and stuff. And I wonder if yoga actually helps with your dream state at all. I'm assuming that it does. We might see if we can't have somebody to call in that might know a little bit about that. But I, you know, as far as dreams go, I really think that that story you just told, it seems sort of odd because it's sort of directly related to him and meeting this person telling the story. But other than that, was there any other relationship between them, and why would that be sort of a nonsensical, nonchalant sort of thing? There's really nothing that can be done about it unless then these two people have a relationship or actually talk about it or maybe witness to something about it. Then there might be a story there, but it seems like it's not complete. Interesting. I think that's plausible and certainly possible. So, you know, as far as the dreams go, I mean, it might just be something that if he was going to be fearful about it in the first place, maybe his dream was just sort of foreshadowing of maybe him freaking out. But I don't see what there's a reason to you know, have a panic or be upset about it all. So I would encourage anybody to, embrace their dreams and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that's my little take on that.
Yeah, no, I mean, certainly we've all had dreams that this, that, or the other thing come true, but at least parts of them. To have a dream, though, I think that's probably the reason they had a panic attack, and I personally don't know them. This is on the paranormal section of Reddit. It's, you know, where everyone can post and put their own stories and get opinions and all that. It's, I just think weird when you have something as specific as a plane crash. I have had a similar experience, and I thought it was really weird, but they were much more separated. It wasn't a day apart. Out by where you are, kind of near the farmhouse, when I would be out there for a while staying in the area, I had a dream vividly about the land out there and areas around it where there would be a plane crashing, and for whatever reason. So I've always been terrified of planes as well, and turns out months after that, there was a plane that kind of crashed in the same area, right at one of the small towns near you. But it was, and I was there to kind of, you know, be around it and witness it and everything. So it was certainly I understand when you have a dream and it comes true in a sense that you get a little panic. But for that to be that immediate, I know I would be a little worried if dreamed about something the very next day and it's coming true, especially with the college scenario and professor, someone you've never met, not just a friend saying something to you. It's multiple things, I think, that kind of raised the alarms there and made them panic.
I think what you might be onto, too, is some of the things some people might have other references, but precognition is sort of the term. So basically you have a deja vu or a dream that allows you then to then in the future have a deja vu moment and go, wait a minute, this has already happened. But it's more along the lines of what they call precognition. And it's one of those interesting things that happens to, I don't think, very many people, but I don't know that people pay attention to it that much. I think really if we delved into it deeper and, you know, except people were training themselves how to, you know, dream better and all those kind of things, it might be different. But certainly that sounds like something that would be along the lines of precognition, being able to just sort of distinguish something in your life that's not happened yet. And with science and the way science is going and everything, it's you know, it's all things to be at all places at all times. So, I mean, the mind is such a mysterious thing that I think we're barely scratching the surface now, but it leads into all these other things, like why don't we have, you know, certain abilities that other animals do? Why can't we sense possibly magnetic fields and ley lines and things like that, like birds and other animals do? Why can't we sense certain things like that? I mean, do we never have it, or did we lose it, or what's the deal there? We just never have developed it.
Did we not need it to survive?
Right. Do we not develop it, or is it something that we have yet to develop? Is it part of the pineal gland, or maybe the hypothalamus, or something like that that, you know, is in charge of our chemical processes? There was a theory a long time ago that somebody threw out there that was about how they thought that mankind just, like, maybe evolved by eating mushrooms or something like that, and that changed his chemical compounds in his brain, which allowed him then to become more cognitive or think in different terms instead of just, you know, the way that they live. And so I thought that was kind of an interesting take. I'm not so sure about that, but I you know, everyone's got an opinion.
It's
great about it.
I was going to say Timothy Leary. That was Terrence McKenna, I believe, who
right.
That was his
right.
One of his theories. And he was always on Coast to Coast. But, yeah, the stoned ape theory. Basically, yeah, that they
okay,
had,
is that what it was? He, right.
Yeah, that they had, excuse me, I'm losing my voice here, that they were, whatever, I can't remember what specific, if it were chimpanzees or if it were all forms of primates that ate, you know, mushrooms. I think it was specifically psilocybin, I believe, I believe it was specifically psilocybin mushrooms. And then there was that's basically how he associated with certain ones being able to make tools, and that's basically how they slowly developed. But that was Terrence McKenna's theory, the stoned ape theory.
Okay, right, yeah. I was going to say, I knew that it was had a backstory to it or whatever, but I thought that was kind of interesting, you know, a take on what was going on there. But does it have any relation to dreams and whatnot? Because some people do have, you know, there's all kinds of rituals where people take peyote and all kinds of things, and if you saw... You know, some movies that came out a while back about that sort of thing where people go into a different state. And, you know, I guess for tribal people and, you know, people that lived a long time ago, kind of partook of what was around you. And, you know, who really knows what people were eating at the time and what it might have done. But certainly that was a much more practiced thing back in the day than it is now as far as people doing it for religious practices and things like that. They always viewed it, though, as a spiritual thing and as something, you know, to do just to be respected and all that. Today it's sort of more like a party scene, I think. But, you know, that's, you know, there. But, yeah, as far as dreams go, I wonder if that has something to do with it. Why do we have dreams, and have we always had dreams? And the interpretation of those dreams, are they important or are they not? You know, specifically, it seems like that seems to be the case. But, you know, and even in our own history, we see people who do remote viewing and other things who can, you know, somehow go into this state as being awake and then sort of astral project and be able to, you know, go to certain places and things like that. And it's really hard to quantify any of that because it's hard science. There's really no way to hard scientific data people's, you know, brain waves, and I know that they can do that now, but certainly it's not in the forefront in the media or anything like that as far as what that really means, because if they could scan everybody's brain and they would, you know, be able to tell, you know, what's going on and things like that. So I wonder if they've done any experiments like that as far as people in the dream state, I'm sure, that have recorded their activity. And what might help that as opposed to hurt that is the question. And does it have something to do with possibly some of the additives and things that we partake of today as a modern society that we didn't have before? Because a lot of people don't really talk about their dreams anymore, and it's sort of odd. I think that when I was a kid, people were talking about it all the time. Oh, what did you dream last night? What did you have? You know, and you're always thinking
right.
about it. And we're always reiterating it. And now as adults, you don't really hear anybody talking about their dreams. Maybe they're all, you know, bad, or I really don't know, but certainly another field that is paranormal in its own right. So,
yeah, well, I think anything associated with the mind like that, when it's, I don't think we understand dreams enough, and I may be wrong. I know there's been tons of studies behind them, but as far as scientifically why it is people dream certain things and how they can control it. We've talked about lucid dreaming on the last show, but being able to possibly understand it more to control your dreams. I mean, we talked about a little bit when Alex called it the movie Inception, but being able to understand the different dream levels and limbo and all that, and being able to if you could modify your dream state, whether that's through the use of, like, you know, you mentioned with Terrence McKenna's theory that people were using the psilocybin mushrooms, or it's some other compound, or maybe some type of other way of altering your mind, or whatever it may be, to see, like we always say, what's on the other side. That would absolutely be pretty fascinating.
Yeah, like
doing it through dreams, I think, would be the way to possibly do it, because it's, you know, I think possibly your mind is easier to possibly modify if you're in the dream state, or control, because you're, you know, you're already basically in a virtual reality and you already have the DMT and you're in deep REM sleep. Then, you know, you definitely could be having these modifications to whatever it is that you've got going through your brain that you probably wouldn't have when you're awake.
Yeah, because speaking of which, like that movie, so people were scientifically trying to induce this in that movie Altered States. But you mentioned something there about the dream state and sort of a virtual reality, because we're getting to that stage now where science is reaching that point where video games and other gaming systems with these headsets and doing a virtual reality almost in themselves, and whether or not that actually releases the chemicals in your brain, I think it really does. But it's really hard to say whether artificially stimulating it like that is good or bad. I don't know what your take on that is, but certainly it gets to a certain point where, like Lawnmower Man, that movie where you just get overload and you could just, you know, fry your brain or whatever it might be, but, you know, trying to do
right.
it artificially. And that's one of those things that technology is coming to that point now where people are using those virtual reality headsets and things like that. I didn't know what you thought about those.
Well, I've never used one. I know there's I think it's called the Oculus Rift is one that was the leading one, the most popular one for a while. And I can't entirely remember some of the other brands, but I think what the deal is, the reason they're not as popular as they should be, is there's a lot of work that goes into them. We'd all love to be able to put a pair of goggles on and all of a sudden it's like we're in another world and, oh, look at this. But the motion sickness behind it and everything else you have to be holding on
right.
to be able to get everything to work properly. It's not as simple as put some goggles on and turn to the left and, you know, think about this with these first-person shooters and these role-playing games and these games you explore and go around. You got to run around everywhere, so, you know, how do you get someone to run without actually moving? And I think
yeah.
that it's great for the ability with, stimulating yourself mentally to be able to – all these different things going on. And yeah, you literally are in another world, but I think at the same time the side effects with the motion sickness aren't the best. So the technology behind it, I think the idea is great, but getting it to do its purpose, I think maybe could be done possibly through the dream state a little easier. And I may be wrong.
Yeah.
But I know they've been working on the Oculus Rift headset for at least the technology behind it since, you know, like the 90s. It's not just like something people came up with recently. They've been trying and trying and trying. It's the technology everyone kind of wants, you know, and you can go back to some of the old movies and TV shows and people put these headsets on even back in the day and, oh, look, they're in another world and, you know, virtual reality headset. The idea has been there forever, but I don't think the technology can quite match up with at least our current human DNA to make it how it is now. We need to
yeah.
figure it out.
Well, not only is that, it seems like, I don't want to keep mentioning movies, but like Firefox, that came out a long time ago, but it was demonstrating something that we're using now technology-wise in our own fighter pilots. These guys got these helmets that are virtual reality helmets, basically, and communicate with the plane directly via their brain waves and all kinds of ocular devices and whatnot. So you could be flying around in Mach 3 and shooting down targets and doing maneuvers, you know, all within this little screen heads-up display in this helmet. And to be able to control that kind of capability with a helmet is something that, you know, they've really, I'm sure, you know, got a hold on now, but came out in the movies a long, long time ago. And that's kind of the way technology kind of works. You know, they kind of just like bleed it out a little bit to us there. But in the movies,
right.
people always come up with it first, you know, but seemingly anyway, but they could be maybe looking into things. But really, as a secular population and, you know, the regular civvies that we are, I mean, we, you know, you could take things like movies and we try to you know, use those as a tool to imagine what might be possible. And we've always talked about the show about if you can imagine it, it's got to be possible. So, you know, and whether or not the dream state has a lot to do with that, that's the question. Because people who seem to have really good dream states and are able to act on those dreams and be in lucid states, seemingly, you know, are able to operate in a certain way in life, in real life, as opposed to people who are just so stressed out or whatever that they don't ever dream or they don't ever remember their dreams or they feel that they have no part in their dream. But, you know, and I can imagine, you know, if you in a bad situation, you know, or bad circumstances or horrible times, then your dreams might reflect that as well. So, you know, it's hard to say. Maybe it has something to do with, yeah, your own lifestyle and how satisfied you are in your own life as to whether or not that's something that you can fulfill.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, anyways, let's see. Hold on one second. I thought so. We had a caller calling in.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, I was going to say we might.
Looks like they dropped off. We did have a caller, so let's see. They might have someone calling in to talk about dreams. They were there, and now they're gone, so we will see if they come back. But anyways, yeah, we could go on about dreams, obviously, all night. I know Alex hopefully will be calling in. I managed to get in touch with him and let him know that we were doing a show, and, you know, he's just always got good opinions on whatever it is we were talking about.
If you ever get a caller or anything, just jump in and say we got a caller. Just cut me off at any moment. That's fine.
Oh, no, they were just actually there for a moment, but I'm not seeing them come back, so we'll wait. Anyways, going on to Nick's subject. Anyways, I texted this one to you, at least the article, and I'm not sure if the picture had popped up for you or not, with the old Greek funeral sculpture from originally built in 100 B.C., and it's now kept in Malibu, California at the J. Paul Getty Museum. So it's a really bizarre-looking sculpture. Did you end up looking at that picture?
Not as yet. I tried to, but it wouldn't download all the way because it was pretty big. But I just had to jump on my show with charging my phone, so I don't get a very good signal where I charge my phone. So, but, yeah, I'll have to look that up for sure. What is it about, really, as far as the sculpture is concerned?
It's a pretty basic sculpture, and I think if you get a chance to look at it, I know that you're you know a lot about art, a lot more than I would at least, and it's actually one of those that's a pretty decent sculpture for back in the day. It's pretty much a slated piece of concrete, and there's on the left side of it there's a little girl, and she's holding what looks like a laptop, and I'll get back to that in a second. And then there's a cross, and then there's a lady that is sitting in a chair reaching out and kind of grabbing this. So, you know, you got a little girl presenting this what I mean, I am not joking. It 100% looks like a perfectly right-angled, perfectly smooth laptop. I mean, either that or a briefcase, if you will, but it is perfectly slender and shaped like a laptop. And it even has two drilled ports that look like USB ports in there. And this is one that has not been modified. It's been in a museum, and since then it's been in Greece in a museum, and it's now in Malibu, California. So everyone is now hearing about it because it's in the United States, so they're kind of like, what in the world is this? You got to check it out. If you go to express.co.uk, the name of the article is "This Bizarre Photo Has Paranormal Investigators Convinced Time Travel Has Already Happened." Obviously,
yeah, right.
That doesn't have anything to do, in my opinion, with time travel. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. Maybe the technology was already there.
So
I don't know how
any way to
associate
really,
with it.
Is there any way to date the material? I mean, is this something that is several hundred years old, or what are we talking here?
It was actually, no, they dated the sculpture. It's an ancient Greek funeral cemetery sculpture. That's dated from 100 B.C. So we're talking about thousands of years old, which is...
So it seems really odd. So, I mean, it's not just a plaque that had somebody's name written on it at one time or something, like giving them a gift of recognition maybe, but a laptop. I mean, yeah, unless there were keys or buttons or it was unfolded.
It's perfectly smooth.
It's really hard to say. It's kind of a stretch, but...
Well, people like to associate right angle looking cases with laptops. So I thought it was an interesting one to at least bring up the subject, because it brings up a whole other, you know, hieroglyphics. There's the famous one, I can't remember where it was, that looks like helicopters, and you got, you know, then they look like rockets, all sorts of hieroglyphics out there that resemble certain things. One, actually, my favorite one of all time looks like the X-34 land speeder from Star Wars, and I've always held on to the fact that they knew that, you know, that's what was going to be in Star Wars. So it brings up another subject. Do you think that possibly there were people that had access and knew the information about these technologies, not necessarily the specific, but the general concepts behind them? The artist who painted the helicopter, had the idea for it, who was it? Da Vinci, basically came up with the idea for the helicopter, supposedly, and couldn't figure out the technology, didn't have access to the resources or technology at the time to build it. Do you think people are aware of technologies? Obviously, you can think of something in your mind and maybe try and figure out a way for it to come true, but when it's dated thousands and thousands and thousands of years before it was actually in existence, I think it's what raises alarms. Do you think that possibly these technologies may have existed or may have been told about in the past to these civilizations, and they had some type of mindset about it?
Yeah, that brings up a whole bunch of stuff, because you ever have dreams where you're going to sleep and all of a sudden you have this really cool idea for an invention or some new thing, and it's the greatest thing in the world, and you're like falling asleep, and then you forget it, and you can't remember what it was, but you pretty much thought it was really cool, and you should have been able to do that, but you don't remember what it was.
For sure.
I'm wondering if the inventions of mankind don't come to fruition that way, if they're sort of just seeded in our dreams and in our subconscious until later on. But there's been evidences of, you know, computers and, you know, cogs and very complicated things way back in the day. So several thousand years ago. So I really do believe in that scenario, that there's nothing really new under the sun there. I really think that, you know, humanity could have came and gone several times on the planet, and in those times they could have gotten to a certain technological, plateau, and then, you know, start over again. And then some of that information is lost, but some of it is found later, and then seemingly kept and hidden by a certain group of humans or individuals that, you know, something that has to be held on to because of our so-called, you know, social constraints when it comes to our, you know, beliefs and religious things and things like that. I think we tend to not want to disturb those ideas, but I really think that our planet's history probably is a lot more fantastical than we want it to believe. I mean, we go up in school and, you know, Christopher Columbus discovered America and then history started. You know, I mean, I really think that it's far more, diverse than that. But even some of the things like the Large Hadron Collider, and for them looking for the Higgs boson, they built this giant multi-billion-dollar thing, 17 miles and all this, you know, several countries and states involved. And it's all based off of this ancient, Indian stuff and Hindu stuff, and, you know, the chakras and all that. So it's really interesting that it's all just sort of a revamp of what was already done in the past. There's all kinds of stuff coming out of the mysticism in the Eastern religions that deal with those kind of things. And they, you know, had claimed at one time to have partaken in and been part of, you know, the fallen angels or the gods or the Nephilim or whatever you want to call them, coming down and teaching them. And that's kind of, you know, one of those things that is something that they even have as a statue right out in front of it. So it's really interesting that I think we're just now revisiting all these technologies that I really don't think that they're for all of mankind. It really seems like it's just for an elite few to test and to mess with. It doesn't seem like the general populace is not really involved, obviously, in what they're doing. But some speculate that these could have horrible ramifications on this, that, and the other thing. But there are definitely plenty of ancient, you know, descriptions of these such scientific kind of things. And it's really interesting now. I don't know why people go out of their way to try to hide these or try to keep them for themselves. But the Shiva and all those other types of ancient sort of demigods were, you know, revered and stuff like that because they could fly and they could manipulate matter and they could do all these things that people thought were, you know, magical. So interesting subject for sure. And, you know, I...
Yeah, definitely.
As far as the statue, I mean, concrete, I mean, when did they start making concrete? Is it really just...
No, I don't know if it was concrete. I don't know materials.
Right, I was going to say, because I wouldn't think that concrete would be the building material of something that was 100
I see something that looks like a rock, and I said it was concrete. It was whatever, you know, they would have sculpted out of.
Okay,
sometimes things come out of my mouth,
yeah.
And I realize what I said, and...
Well, that's all right. We were not all that
detailed
as far as our news reporting goes, but sure. I mean, sure, it was interesting. But a
no
laptop.
One's
as bad
as Brian Williams.
So yeah, basically, a girl holding a laptop or giving a laptop to an older lady is sitting down. Is that what the sculpture is about?
You know, it's basically all it really is a sculpture of a girl, and it's basically all on a plaque. So you got like a big square background, and engraved into it you have this sculpture of a girl handing what is perfectly a right angle with ports on the side, just like a laptop would be, perfectly smooth. Obviously there's no keys or, you know, emblem or anything. It's all viewed from the side, but you can see what looks like it's a laptop or a case, and this lady reaching to open it and looking at it all elegantly as she's sitting on a chair, looking like this girl's serving her either something, or it looks just like a laptop, which is hilarious because anyone from this era that has looked at it is, you know, blowing it up. And now all these conspiracy theories are coming out about, oh, did they know? Is this a time travel thing? In reality, it probably is just resembling a case, but it's definitely worth a look as a picture because it's one of those that falls into the hieroglyphics category with old technologies being associated in with the art, and kind of brings up the idea of, did they know something? You know, maybe it was supposed to be some type of technology to where, or some type of at least invention we didn't know about that they had. I don't know what, you know, the lady does look very elegant. It looks maybe possibly like a jewelry case, but it with the ports in the side, the square ports, it does that. They weren't drilled in there recently. They've been there. It does look like a laptop with like USB ports and you know, the internet cable jack, and it's kind of interesting.
Right. So. Yeah. Very, very interesting.
Well, anyways, I had another subject. I know we've talked about the idea behind it before, and it kind of falls into dreams because people have this a lot. Dreams about them, at least. They there's people who have talked about black dogs, or hellhounds, or whatever it may be, you know, these apparitions that, you know, are nocturnal and seem to show up. The black dog theory is basically the most popular over in, like, England and the UK, and it's big in British culture. They like to talk about it a lot, these, you know, and there's lots of art behind it. People paint them in movies and, you know, folk stories and everything about them, but
I didn't know if you were familiar with something different.
There's actually a really weird Patrick Swayze movie that he was in where he's like a trucker, and he has a similar thing where this black dog keeps coming to him where he's dreaming. The idea behind it is basically dogs have been associated with the devil. They've been associated with death, or at least used to be, especially in British culture back in the day. It was a, you know, dreaming about it or being associated with, kind of like you hear the, you know, oh, if you see a black cat, that's bad luck. Personally, most of my favorite cats have been black cats. They're awesome, so I don't know where that has come from. They don't seem to be bad luck.
Yeah.
But the idea was, you know, these black dogs are associated with the devil and bad luck. And I have a related subject to that theory, which is the idea of never – I don't know if you've heard of this, but back in the early 90s, there was a Texas reporter named Brian Bethel who reported out in Texas, and actually originally the stories came from Portland, Oregon, and I know you've had some experiences in Oregon, spent time out there and all that, of black-eyed kids, basically these kids aged, you know, probably 5 to 15, 14, not adults, but, you know, kids who are seen hitchhiking, panhandling, walking around, and people are always encountering them on doorsteps or, you know, in residences, always in places that are kind of populated, suburban areas or maybe residential areas of downtown, or there's, you know, a large populated area of people and homes. And they're an urban legend. Obviously, there's no scientific proof for it. It's not one of these large things, but these children are seem to be some type of a story of these hitchhiking kind of bizarre occurrences, and they're related a lot to the black dogs and apparitions. And the idea, I guess, behind them is that they're some type of time traveling or possibly interdimensional beings that are able to travel, and that they have purely black eyes, and that they're able to do something possibly to people that have these paranormal encounters with them. And there's been a lot of talks about the black dogs, but they're always associated with that. Black dogs, you can go back to, you know, the medieval times, people have associated with them, and it brings up apparitions and all that. It's just kind of an interesting urban legend that people are still reporting today. Brian Bethel is the Texas reporter who originally told everyone about the people having these encounters, or at least broke the story back in the 90s, and that was from Texas, Abilene, Texas, as well as Portland, Oregon. There's a lot of people reporting it now all over the United States. People are saying that they've had these encounters with these children with, you know, pure black eyes, and then, you know, briefly, and then they seemingly not disappear in front of them, but are gone and never to be seen again. And certainly if you live in a residential area with children, you might.
Hello. Well, I somehow have lost connection. I don't hear him anymore. Max, where are you? Hopefully you didn't lose him there. I wonder if I'm the only one on. Anyway, yeah. The soulless black-eyed children who come to your door in the middle of the night. You're not supposed to let them in. Fantastical idea or what? It's hard to say. Superstition. Is it something that people really believe in or what? I don't know. Don't step on glass. Don't walk under the ladder.
Thank you.
All that stuff. But anyway, there you are. I just heard you for a second. Are you there? I think I was leaving you for a
second. Yeah, I got disconnected. I wasn't sure how much you heard of what I said or where I got cut off.
just a few seconds ago. It's all right. I just all of a sudden, you're gone. The black-eyed children got
me. But did you get the gist of what I was getting at?
Yes, I did. But it goes into superstition. Now, it could be a fantastical internet hoax. But I've heard stories about that as well. You sold the children that walk around and come up to your door. You're not supposed to let them in. They kind of want something from you, but you don't really know what. People feel afraid, and they feel this overwhelming sense of dread, and you're supposed to not
actually,
let them
we
in.
We have a caller calling in right now. Sorry to interrupt you.
Okay,
but,
sure.
Piercy's been on the line for a minute. Sorry to interrupt you, but let's go ahead and get him on. Sorry about that, whoever's calling in. Hey, how's it going?
Hello. It's Alex again. That I call
hey,
in.
Alex. Hey, man.
I'm looking forward to your next show. I'm excited to see that you did a longer show, too. That's cool.
Yeah,
yeah,
well,
we still got about an hour left, though. So.
Yeah, you get talking, and it goes by so fast that you don't really have time to cover the majority of subject that they wanted to. So really, 2 hours is really is a good time to be able to flesh some things out as far as conversation goes. So, yeah, good to have you on, Alex. We were just talking about these black soulless children that people have been reporting. You've heard about this on the internet, haven't you? These little girls or whatever, little children that show up with black eyes.
Oh, yeah.
They hear people,
you know, I thought I saw it firsthand before. I was actually at World of Fun, just enjoying my day at World of Fun, and I looked over, and this kid has solid black eyes. And I thought I was seeing things, so I turned and looked again, and no, sure enough, he did. And he was looking right at me, smiling, which kind of creeped me out, so...
Right.
That person next to me, I go, hey, buddy. He goes, yeah. I go, you see that? Does that guy have black eyes for you, too? He goes, yeah, I see it. But that's weird. So I didn't know at that time that they had contacts that can turn your eyes completely black.
Oh,
it's
a different
real
color.
Thing.
Right. Right. So but why would little kids dress up and go out and just be wandering around looking at people and making them weird it out? I don't know.
No,
I mean,
what age are you talking? Like 5, 6? Seven,
well, I think anywhere from, like, you know, yeah, 8 to 12, something like that.
Yeah,
you know,
they've been
reported
from, like, 6 to 10 years old. And, you know, yeah I wasn't jumping to some pair. But, you know, they've been reported for a while, even back to, like, the 90s, early 90s, when I don't know when the colored contacts came out, but I'm sure it is more or less an urban legend, but it's been associated with black dogs and all these kind of stories. The idea basically of there being these apparitions, these children popping up that have these dark souls, and whether you can see that through their eyes, or maybe some people can see that and other people can't. It brings up the entire, I guess, idea of, you know, it's been in Stephen King books, movies, Storm of the Century, the idea of someone coming to, you know, the devil coming to find a son or a prodigy, wherever it may be. Are there possibly these kids out there that are possessed, you know, that may be a religious term, but possibly,
right,
whether it's extraterrestrial or demonic or spiritually entwined with something that we aren't. Are there maybe the idea of these black-eyed children or black-eyed dogs or these spirits, are they possibly connected to something and trying to bring people into that? And I think that was the main story behind it.
Here's my opinion on that. Like, maybe they're a projection of something. Like, yeah, the devil's trying to talk to you, but I think that evil is a little more sinister than that. They don't, like, come – it doesn't get in your face. It likes to hide in the shadows and trick you. So, I mean, maybe it's a sign that because you're not getting a point or something. Or maybe these kids really exist. But a good way to follow up on it would to see if there's any police reports, or at least recent police reports of – this situation of either hellhounds or kids showing up with black eyes. I mean, that's actually be something good to check on YouTube too. Cause I mean, you can get all kinds of information off there, but you never know what's real and what's fake.
Well, what do you think about the topic of superstition itself? Is this something that, this idea of, you know, breaking glass or walking under a ladder or stepping on a crack, do you have any family superstitions or anything like that, that, or superstition field, do you have any yourself?
Yeah, you know, I did painting for a while, so I was nervous when I'd walk underneath a ladder. I'm pretty sure that develops because people working above you didn't want to drop a tool on your head and kill you. So they just told you it was bad luck to walk under them.
But I think
superstition... it can have an effect on you if you want it. If you want to believe in it, like you break a mirror and you think for the next 7 years you're going to have bad luck, you very well might have bad luck.
Yeah, because your mind can actually make that come true, right? If you believe, it's like the whole placebo effect where you're just, you know, if you make yourself believe it, then maybe you could be healed or maybe you could, you know, become ill or whatever it is, depending on your mindset. And so there's so many, you know, superstitions like, oh, don't sweep your feet or, you know, this, that, and the other. I've met so many people with, you know, rabbit's foot and everything under the sun. And is that just part of our human makeup? Or is it a way to get people to actually sort of run their own destiny by projecting something into the future by holding on to some device or not doing a certain thing? Or, you know, some people have some really weird things that they do or that they don't do, or, you know, because of that. And I'm wondering if that's just hereditary or is it just cultural, or what do you think?
I think if you're going to do a sequence of things before you have to do something, like if you need to check your keys 8 times or the doors or whatever it is before you leave the house, it might be a little, what they call OCD,
right,
more than superstitious. That might just be a mental thing with you. Of, like for me, I encountered a house fire at a young age, so before I leave the house, I got to check the stove. I got to make sure there's no candles. I got to, you know, look and make sure there's things that don't need to be plugged in. But that's because of something that traumatic happened, rewired my brain to do that. So I think that's where superstition can come into play. I don't know where they came up with knocking on wood. I mean, why do I got to knock on wood every time I say something bad? Like, Billy and them are going on a car ride. I hope nothing bad happens. So grab no wood around me.
And that's something that we've always done, and I've always done, and everybody I know has done. And where did it come from? You know, does somebody have an answer to that? I'll have to call in if you do. But yeah,
I actually know this.
Really, walking under ladders is the only superstition that you really have, or that your family might have. I mean, is there anything else?
I don't know. You tell me. What's your superstitions?
You know, that's kind of
strange. I'm superstitious about everything.
Oh, you are? Like what?
Well, not like everything. I just the typical things, like you said, knocking on wood and all that.
Right.
I don't walk under a lot of ladders, but the idea of at least back where I used to live, I would see cats everywhere because there wasn't a leash law for cats. So there'd be cats everywhere crossing roads and all over the place. And you have no idea when I was younger how many times I would turn around for whatever reason because black cat ran across the road.
No.
I would hang out with people who had black cats and all that. And then I said, this is stupid. This isn't bad luck. But with the idea of knocking on wood, that's actually, I may be wrong. I can't remember what culture it was, but I think the idea was they would knock on the wood in their houses to keep the spirits from coming in. You know, it was almost like a way of scaring them and keeping evil spirits away. They would do it on trees or whatever near their homes. It has some story like that that's so stupid, and I don't know why it stuck around or what that even has to do.
Oh,
you could simply
yeah.
just yell. I don't know why someone said, you know, don't. Yeah, you just start screaming, but I guess it's easier now just to knock on wood and it stuck
yeah,
around. There was some European
that
culture
situation?
That did that.
Have you ever been in a situation, you guys, where you've wanted to knock on wood and because you said something and then you found out there was no wood around you and you look around for some, you know, like just why do we do those things, you know?
It's been ingrained
in our
minds. Well,
if you feel like if you don't, something bad's going to happen.
All right.
Hey, buddy, that's fake wood. I'm sorry. You got to go somewhere else.
Right. Does it create some sort of vibration, something that goes out into the universe that allows, you know, the spirits to know that you're there? I mean, what's the deal with the wood thing? And now, what about this other thing? We talked this previously about, you know, the ghostly stuff, about this new game going around. What is it called? Timmy or something like that, where these kids play. It's like a Ouija board thing, except for they use these sticks or something. And it's another one of those practices that all these younger kids are getting into. And I didn't know if you guys have heard of that. Have you guys heard of that?
Drum class? That's something you do with sticks. Other than that, I don't know. Ouija board.
I don't know if there's a particular name for it, or if there was, I can't remember. There was a, it wasn't, was it maybe Charlie, no, it wasn't the Charlie thing. Was it Charlie?
It might have been. I thought it was a name. It was somebody's name. It just doubled up, and that was the name of the game.
I think it was Charlie's, the Charlie Challenge, but people would take these pencils, and they would align them up in a particular pattern and do whatever it may be. And you could use pieces of wood, too, but generally they were short pieces of wood, pencils, whatever everyone has access to that they would do it with. And they would say, you know, summon the supposed spirit of Charlie that I believe had something to do with Mexican spirits. And you can Google this. And there was a lot of people that would film it to the point where it became like a YouTube phenomenon with all these people. This was probably back in the summertime, people are still doing it and filming it, and people have explained you can do this, that, or the other thing and get it to do it, but then other people have tried that and not had the success when people told them how to do it. So it's kind of a back and forth argument of how do people do it, but the idea is you can summon this spirit that's able to move, manipulate things in front of you, move these pencils in particular fashions when you ask him to come or whatever it is and you know, come hang out with you and, you know, get your pencil across
like
the room.
A seance or something like that. And we were talking about before about the Ouija boards and whether, you know, you should use them or not. And this is kind of along the same lines where these young kids are inviting these spirits in intentionally. And it could just be a bad thing eventually or overall or, I mean, really, you know, And whether or not does it have anything to do with the individuals themselves and how much they believe in it, too. Is it just somebody blowing on the sticks with their mouth, you know, and making it move and, you know, and things like that. So I didn't know if you guys had an opinion on it but yourselves as far as people should be doing, or does it really even matter? Or?
I personally, I don't have too much. I've never done the thing myself. I've never even used the Ouija board. I know people that have, and just about everyone I've known that's used a Ouija board, except for like two people that are brutally honest, have said everyone's always had some traumatic experience or, you know, someone's had something that said they're going to die or this is going to happen. And then I've had two friends that have used it and just said nothing happened, and it just kind of freaked them out because they, you know, like we talked about, they were superstitious. They like, we shouldn't have done that, but absolutely nothing happened. So I don't know with Charlie or the Ouija boards, but we talk about this all the time. I just personally think if I can not put bad luck or
I don't want to use the word karma because it's not like I'm doing anything negative to anyone, but the idea of if I had children, I wouldn't want them hanging out using old rituals to try and summon demons to get a pencil to move or whatever it may be. Even if it's completely fake, I feel like that there's more productive things people can do in their free time. Go plant a garden. Go for a jog. Paint a picture. Do something. Don't be trying to summon demons. But that's just my take. If that's what you want to do, just don't involve me in it.
Yeah. Right. Here's what I think about that.
Like, yeah, I don't see why they're so evil. Whoever made the Ouija board evil? I think Hollywood made it evil in a couple of their movies by making it look really scary. Because in all reality, you're just trying to talk to spirits. You're just trying to talk to dead people or something.
Well, in the Han, not Han, but the Chinese, there was a Chinese dynasty, and Drake knows a lot about the Ouija board. I wish he were able to call in right now, but there was a Chinese civilization that made it illegal. So I think the idea just behind anything, when you prohibit it, because people were, using it for whatever reason, that they didn't want them to have it or didn't want them to be messing around with that or having people report certain things. I think when you make something illegal or you say you shouldn't do it or you're not allowed to have it, I think that's simply what makes it evil. I agree with you. I don't think there's anything evil necessarily about it. If I can go make one from materials out of the ground that are not simply evil at all, if I can go build it from something that's laying around, I don't have to go to a third world country and get some, ridiculous diamond, mineral, whatever it may be. It's pretty much a piece of plastic. Why is it some evil thing? I think it's just the idea behind it that people get all worked up. Can you guys hear me okay? Okay, I hope you guys are still on the line. Let's see. Are you guys still there?
Get disconnected. Yeah.
Yeah, when it was Blog Talk Radio, they're having issues right now, so it's kicked me off once already, so I apologize for any disconnections. But
Blog Talk, I'm trying to talk about Ouija boards right now. What's going on?
Were you guys able to hear anything I said, or how long, when did I get cut off?
You're dead air maybe a minute.
No, yeah. Not even that, a couple seconds.
I was just getting
there.
The fact, I think, kind of what he said, when you make something illegal, you say you shouldn't have it, then of course you're going to be freaked out behind it. And it was, some Chinese dynasty that originally had outlawed them. But, yeah, if you can go make it, why is it evil? I could go build one myself, apparently, so why is it evil?
Yeah, it actually has a little bit of a Jewish tradition as well, if I'm not mistaken. So it's just one of those things that, and I would refer back to even, maybe you guys are younger, you might know that Yu-Gi-Oh! Cartoon, where basically you have a full cartoon where several seasons of these kids who get together and they put their hands together and it forms this little symbol, and they actually summon these creatures that fight on this board. And that's been something that's been put in the minds of children for, I guess, the last, 2 decades now. And I'm wondering if that's going to have an overall effect on what, this next generation believes or what they possibly could do even. Do you think even commercials or possibly cartoons can really, steer the younger generation in one way or the other? Is this a good thing or a bad thing? What do you guys think?
I definitely believe they can do that. I mean,
yeah,
something in all kinds of things, like Final Fantasy games and all kinds of other games, like, it's not like a demonic thing behind it. It's like, oh, we need help, so we're going to summon these creatures. Now, Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon, I've always loved them. Don't get me wrong, but the idea behind them is kind of weird in itself. Like, let's fight these animals or let's fight these summons against each other.
But is that something that could be done in the future? Could that be reality? Because now if you have this whole generation of kids who believe it could be true, is that going to manifest itself into reality where people are going to be summoning these creatures from the undead?
I wouldn't say undead, but have you seen the new Transformers where they're like building robots just out of nothing? The particles form together and they make the robot? You know what I'm talking about? It's a special type of metal that they calculate and it can build anything and become anything. So yeah, I think that could be in the future. Like, you could have this little pocket metal thing on you and you're like, I summon this creature, and then the metal forms and makes it, and then it is alive. That's a possibility. as far as technology goes, and the Transformers really focused on that in their new movie.
Well, that was really came out first in the the Terminator movies, where there's a Terminator 3 or 4, where it was a molten
Terminator
creature that just could. Yeah, it turned into this, liquid, and it could do whatever it wanted, some sort of metamaterial or whatever, ferrous metal or whatever, that could rearrange itself, into whatever way you want. Now, what kind of supercomputer would you have to really be able to do that? But I don't know, some sort of memory metal. They have that now. That's one of these technologies that we're just now getting into, this memory metal and some of these other things that will allow even water. They're doing experiments with water, and that's another thing that I really think that we should have a topic on. It may not be under paranormal, but water itself is and what people are doing with it is really interesting these days. As far as
have you heard of what they're doing with the new metal that repels water? You seen that?
They
made a metal that like completely repels it, like it bounces off of this stuff, so it like doesn't rust or anything. This guy just started making it, and Bill Gates came into the picture and started funding him. So it's like a real thing. Like it could be used for all of our plumbing or for water catches or whatever it is, and it doesn't rust and it doesn't actually touch the water. It's really weird stuff. And that's out there. That just came out on a science webpage I was looking at.
Interesting. Yeah, I like that. It's a good take. Like the rolled-out solar panels that guy has. You can it's a bendable roll. You can roll it up and just roll it out, and it's a solar panel. So, I mean, The technology is getting to the point, or I think, I wish that some of these applications are a little more accessible to the regular public, but interesting, really interesting stuff there. And like I said, we could cover a whole probably show on some of these other topics as far as that goes, but there's so many things to cover. But when it comes to water, for thousands of years, people made holy water and blessed it and all these things, and that's shown to be true, that it actually changes the molecular structure of the water. And if you, does this have any real effect? Can you spray holy water on an evil creature or a vampire or something like that? Does it really work? Does the properties of a pure, reconstituted water have some sort of special properties that allow it to dispense evil?
I would think, personally, my opinion, holy water, and I don't want to, I grew up in, I went to Catholic school and Christian schools and all that, so I was certainly exposed to all that. But you got to take into account that priests and pastors and everyone who, is doing the blessing for holy water, they're just people. And, some of them may be pure, good-hearted people that, they don't sin and, they're not horrible people. And, they live like they claim to. And then there's also people that do the blessings, and, maybe they're not the most holiest people. Maybe they have some skeletons in their closet, whatever it may be. And I'm not pointing fingers at anyone. I'm just saying, with the amount of things you hear about with the Catholic Church and with the scandals and all that, certainly, anyone could go to become a priest, and as long as you don't have some, criminal background. Maybe you can become one if you're a criminal. But regardless, I don't think that makes the water chemically changed in a way that would repel some type of spirit. I think that's more or less a Hollywood effect for movies like The Exorcist.
So is that, yeah,
I know
that, it's a superstition.
I actually believe in it.
Priests that have said that they've, done exorcisms and they've thrown it on people that were possessed and, that caused them to burn. So, that part, I don't know. I was simply getting at the fact that I don't think that the blessing in itself, and I may be wrong, is the reason that this water is causing that to happen. It may be a factor of combination between the water and the person doing it, and some type of connection between the person that's throwing the water on
the
spirit.
But what about basically what I'm getting at is just the vibration of your voice, and that's what the whole chanting comes involved here, because the ancient, Eastern cultures with their chanting were able to change the structure of the water. And so it's basically vocalization, and depending on what frequency you're using in your vocals as to how it changes the water. So it's not necessarily what you say, but what tone you use and how much you do it, maybe, because it has shown to work. So, but is there any validity to it, say, being something that it could ward off things that are bad? Is that a superstition, or is that something that, you know, we've always thought about it, you know, vampires and all these other things that supposedly the undead and blah, 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 but we don't really have any real evidence for that. So is that another superstition altogether, or is there something to this water thing? Because we know that, you know, the purer the water, the better whatever it's in. It's just pretty well common sense. And if you have crappy water or water that's the molecular structure is off and it's not right, then, you know, it's not going to be healthy. So I'm wondering, you know, that seems to be something that a lot of people are very interested in these days. What do you guys think?
I believe in holy water. I don't know if they're actually changing it chemically with the vibration of their voice. I mean, it's possible. I know that you can alter water through vibrations, but they're usually high frequency or low frequency vibrations that we don't typically hear with our ear. But holy water, I mean, it's not really the physical property of it. It's the spiritual property, the psychological effects of it. You know,
right.
If you have a group of 500 people around and they all believe this water to be holy and that it's about to bless you, your mind's really going to be convinced that that's happening. And I mean, maybe that alone would be enough to hurt the vampire, you know, just the belief behind it. Like, you truly believe that this is special, so it becomes special, and it has meaning.
Speaking about this vampire thing, I remember last time I was out in Oregon visiting, we went to some gas station or something. There's some gal behind the counter, but she had fake dental fangs, implants in her mouth to make her look like a vampire. Now, there's a whole culture out there of people doing this. And I'm wondering, you know, is this a fantastical thing where people like to bite each other? And is it a sexual thing? Or are people actually trying to drink blood and be vampires?
Yeah, no, that's a real thing. There's vampire bars. It's not like a very popular thing, or it's kind of like Fight Club. First rule about it is you don't talk about it. But they do exist. And you know, kind of odd how I know this, but I used to talk to a lot of people that were really big into vampires and werewolves. And there's actual bars where you could go out there and order some blood or meet some chick that'll let you do that type of stuff to her. So it's kind of freaky. I don't know
well,
if it's real or not.
yeah.
That's what I've heard. So yeah, that thing does exist. I don't know about the fang implants. I don't think I'd go there. I'm pretty sure that would mess with your bite. But
he's right. There is a culture of people that do modify their body, especially now with plastic surgery for whatever reason. And I don't think it's a large number of people. Certainly, you know, I'm sure you might be able to put it into a very small group of people that have done that. But whatever it is, if I think you said there is vampire bars, and I don't know how many people go there that have modified their teeth or their jawline or whatever they would do to do that. But you know, there's people out there. You can go on Vice and check out, I can't remember the guy's name, but they have a full interview with a cannibal. You know, there's people out there that eat people and you know, live in parts of the world where they're allowed to, strangely through loopholes of the law, get away with it and whatever. So I think there's going to be
cultures
of people
that are. What do you guys think about the whole Wiccan cult? How many Wiccans are there, and are they just a weird cult, or is there something to them?
I don't like them, but from what I know, you got to believe in them for them to even do anything to you. So if you don't believe that they have powers, they don't have powers, and that's like the law of the Wiccan. But if you slightly believe in their Wiccan powers, you can be affected by them, is what I've heard. So I've just always chose to not believe.
You know.
So what about numbers here?
I'm proud to say I don't even know about them, so I certainly don't believe. So they
okay,
don't have power.
I was gonna say, what about numbers? I mean, are they thousands of them or hundreds of thousands?
Oh yeah, there's thousands. I know like three or four of them. I met three or four of them in my lifetime in my little town here. That, you know, they study ancient culture and ritual of demons and things like that. And it's not always bad magic. You know, a lot of it's like love and spells of attraction and that type of thing. You know, and bearing a child, you know, these Wiccan communities were really into that type of stuff. Especially, you know, that's why men were subjected as targets more than people to become a Wiccan. You know, so it's definitely a woman culture. But I mean, there are men that do it too. But I don't know very many. All the Wiccans I've met were women.
Right, right. Now, what was their basis for joining, though? Did they believe that it gave them some sort of power over their own reality? Or
honestly, I think it was a lot to do with television. You know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer and other movies like that, where they get these special powers from doing it, or they make this boy fall in love with them. But yeah, those types of people, they're a little bit weird. I'll tell you that much. I mean, they're people, but they're just off a little bit about certain things. Like, I've had one of them on an occasion tell me that she's going to poke me with nails and collect my blood in a cup to drink it later so that she can be with me forever. And I was, that's when I said, okay, I don't want to talk to you anymore. But, but yeah, it's real.
What dating website did you go on?
I wasn't dating. That was at school. And I just, dating my school wasn't the best.
Well, what about that? Well, how about, does anybody got any opinions on Scientology and the growing as another religious, you know, sect that
I
a
do.
Lot of popular people
don't
have been?
I anyone, though.
I can say money.
Yeah, you know,
that's
what I was just going to jump at. I don't want to offend anyone. You know, there may be ideas that they've put inside of Scientology that have some relevance to actual scientific fact, but most of them, about 90% of them probably, and I don't know the actual statistics, are just, you know, Ron L. Hubbard was a science fiction writer, the guy that is the, you know, creator of the religion. So
ooh,
it's
right, right.
There's so many things that go into it. I just, you know, if a religion is less than like 30 years old, I'm sorry, I just kind of think it's a cult, or 40 years old. Not to say that anyone's particularly correct, because I don't think you can't prove religion. No one actually knows. But the ideas behind them, the thetan readers, you know, that we're going to, or the e-readers, we're going to measure your thetan levels. We're going to, you know, have this machine that more or less is just a machine that I can't remember what it measures. Maybe it's your body temperature and it goes off, and then, oh, that means you have a certain level of thetans, you know. People have reported that they've worked at their camps and their recruiting places, or whatever you call them, and that half of it they make up. And then other people have said this, that, and the other thing. But he's right with the money thing. I mean, if you look at the people that have joined it, you know, John Travolta, Tom Cruise, the money that they can get out of it, it's like a cult. Like, oh, give a little bit of money and, you know, you're going to be a better person, and we'll teach you the next step to knowing this and
Right.
I think if you have money and you're addicted to it, then you're certainly going to keep doing it. And they do it even on a small scale level. You know, obviously I'm not Tom Cruise. I can't do a down payment for $2 million to learn the next level of whatever, so I can be a better whatever. So I think it's a business. I think it's a lot of different things. And maybe you can find some good out of it if you look through some of their teachings and some of the stuff they tell you to do. But you know, I think you kind of nailed it. I can find that stuff probably online, or a similar value or similar story or moral from something, and, you know, save my money. And that's just my opinion on it. I don't have any interest in being a Scientologist.
You know, South Park did an episode of it where they criticized it, but what they actually explain at the end is pretty much what they teach you when you get higher up in there. And I think that's another reason why people can't discuss it too much, because they don't know. Only the people higher up in the thing know. So it's like this big secret that everybody wants to know, so they join it to know. It's not like right off the bat, like if you were to join Christian or Catholic or any other religion, here's the books, here's what we practice, this is what it's all about. With Scientology, it's what level are you and what type of information do you have access to?
Right.
But either way, in the South Park episode, what kind of revolves around is there being souls that come down to Earth to live, and there's different levels and different, you know, ages and powers in these souls, and that's why they do these measurements on you to try to figure out what you are and if your soul has more power, which actually I kind of believe in a little bit, like as far as souls go and like people having long lives and maybe being a little bit different of a soul, but I wouldn't go to the extent of making people to pay money to learn about it. So that's where I just I'm not a big fan of organized religion like that.
What you're saying here, and I'm going to get a couple of points across, is that they got some sort of aura detector that somehow allows them to detect your EMS field and how much power you're giving off, like whether you're red or blue or you know, whatever. So they got some sort of aura detector that allows them possibly to tell whether what state you're in at the time, as far as your aura is concerned. I wonder if that has something to do with it. If you notice about some of these, you know, newer religions, it's pretty much just like what you explained. It's all these different levels. What's the deal with that? Why our base religions pretty much go, yeah, this is our book, this is what we teach, and it's pretty much the same thing over and over again. Whereas these new religions have these different levels, and just like the Freemasons and all these other secret organizations, there's all these steps to go through, and the people that are just joining have no idea what the people that are higher up are doing. And it's sort of weird. It's like compartmentalization, like in the government and other things. It's sort of odd that the lowly person that comes in looking for whatever is really just starting, but has to go through all this process. And depending on how much money you have and how much clout you carry, that kind of seems to be what the, you know, how far you get, how fast you get that far. So maybe that's a, you know, an MO of certain things, but I just think it's a little odd. Do they have a machine that can detect people's auras and tell the difference between a good person, a bad person, or one that's enlightened or one that's not? What do you guys think?
And inside their community? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe they have something that's like it that can tell you that. I mean, every heart puts off electromagnetic pulse, so that can be measured. Maybe there's a way they measure that along with the temperature and all that type of stuff. But I do believe in, you know, like, you ever had somebody tell you you're an old soul, even though you're a young person or something like that?
I got that a couple of times in my life.
Yeah, and that kind of, that expression right there is like, why do some people seem more spiritually enlightened about things that go on in the world and other people are not? And that's kind of, I think, where their culture revolves around too, is maybe some of these people are higher levels in the universe, are older in the universe, and some of these other people are not as old in the universe.
And this gets into the reincarnation theory, though, of some other religions, and, you know, Hindu, about reincarnation and coming back until you get it right.
Possibly, but you can't come back as yourself. You can't be exactly you when you come back. You couldn't handle that dramatic change. Like, if you were to die and immediately be in another world. But that's also where babies in life like that come in, because they come into the world not knowing how to do anything. Most of the time, they're crying and screaming and scared, and then they finally grow up into this person. So that could be a presence of reincarnation. Now, I don't think that you'd just be reincarnated on this world over and over again. I wouldn't imagine that to be true.
Another
there's
dimension?
So many, possibly. I mean, I believe in the multiverse galaxies or multiverse complex. You know, like, there's black holes, where they go, they probably go to another universe, and we're all connected through this. And so everything in life, everything that functions, is made up of electricity and atoms. So even when you die, that is broke down and goes somewhere. So you are part of the universe and will always be that way, you know.
Right.
Maybe not your conscious state of mind, but maybe that's where
the
subconscious comes in. And that's where all these supernatural occurrences and religions and all that type of thing develops from, is just that knowing we came from nothing, but now we're here, and where do we go? So that's really the big question of life. That's what everybody wants to know. That's what all these religions are pushing for, but they all can't give you it. They can give you the idea and give you guidelines to achieve what they think life is all about, but they can't say for 100%. Sure, I mean, they can. A lot of them do. A lot of them will say, this is how it works, this is what life is all about, and this is how it goes. But, you know, everybody still kind of questions that a little bit. Like, is it really? Are you sure you know that?
So that's just it, though. Isn't that the human experience? What if we didn't have that? If you knew exactly what everything was, what would be the point of life then? And what would be, you know what I mean? The questioning and being a human being and being able to have questions about the universe, that's what's fascinating about it. If we were already kind of knew everything about it, then, you know, there would be no fascination with it or anymore. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost good that we have a little bit of ignorance in humanity, you know what I mean? Because otherwise, you know, we would be these arrogant, you know, pompous people who, like, you know, like I said, it's just one of those things that I don't think people really think about it until, like, somebody close to you dies or whatever. You don't really think about, you know, what's really important. People aren't going to be on their deathbed going, geez, I wish I would have, you know, sit inside underneath fluorescent lights and play video games more. I wish I would have, you know, they wouldn't be saying those things. So it's kind of,
well, I mean, in American culture, when people die, there's a lot of I wish I would have and I wish I could have. But in other cultures, you know, it's usually like a blessing or a peaceful moment for them.
Right.
So it's just all about how you look at it. But yeah, you're right. You know, and that's a good question. My grandma and I were talking. She goes, I just don't get why evil was ever created. And I started trying to explain to her why. And he said, you know, if everything was perfect, you wouldn't have anything to do. You wouldn't have anything to talk about. You got to have the yin and the yang. You got to have the good and the bad. You know, because if you didn't know what was evil, you wouldn't know what was good, and vice versa. So, like, even all these bad things in life and all that, it's necessary for you as a person to learn from that, you know, because without it, it'd be too perfect, and it just wouldn't work.
Right. Yeah.
Life,
like, no,
itself.
No interest left. Yeah, there wouldn't be any intrigue. And without intrigue, then what, you know, really, that's part of the paranormal paradox of our existence, is that we don't know.
And that's why I really believe in superstitious stuff like ghosts and evil spirits and Ouija boards and black cats and hellhounds and kids with black eyes,
right,
and all that stuff. Because evil is in the world. I mean, it's called the Lucifer effect in the scientific community, and, you know, it's there. So our interpretations of it are really what matter and what we can think about it. But I was going to say, back to what he was talking about earlier, the hellhounds and the superstition about black cats. Isn't that kind of the same thing? Like, when you see a black cat, you think bad luck. But, I mean, also when you see these eyes of a glowing thing, you also think bad luck, so... And what is that? Because I have black cats you can't control. You just, they just cross your path. You got nothing to do with it. You're like, oh, dang, there goes a black cat. Now I'm in
but
bad luck for a while.
But you don't think twice when it's a brown cat. You don't think twice if it's an orange cat. It's a black cat for some reason.
Well,
yeah, why
is
that?
Humanity's always, because of the night, everything black has always been associated with bad and evil. You know, maybe not, it has something to do with just the light and light of day and the darkness of night. And throughout humanity's history, it's been replete with nothing but, you know, references to the dark and to the black. And you know, it's kind of strange that we're sort of kind of in that realm. But that's what's fascinating about it, for sure. And everyone, and in all these different religions, everyone's trying to grasp it in some way or form. And if you notice that some people live their lives like it's do what thou wilt. And other people their lives with strict, you know, I don't know, strict rules.
Right. Well, I was just saying, with the black cat thing, one other thing, and I don't know if this is just one reason behind it, but it's one I always heard, and I'm sure, just like anything, there's, you know, why, like you mentioned with the ladder, why is it bad luck? You know, one culture might say it's bad luck to do this. Others might say, well, yeah, a tool might fall on your head. I always heard black cats are also considered bad luck because, especially back around the Salem witch trial era and before that, when people started getting this obsession with witches, that was basically what witches transformed themselves into to, you know, be amongst other people in civilization, to not necessarily spy on them, but just to walk
around.
Right. And that's, yeah, so that was one thing behind specifically black cats, that they said, oh, that was witches. And like you said, it may be something to do with the idea that, you know, you can't see them really at night. They have, especially black cats, always have really cool eyes. They usually have the, like, amber or green eyes that other cats don't quite have as much. You know, I've seen cats with some cool eyes, but most of the ones with the, you know, pitch black cats usually have real cool looking eyes, but I don't know exactly where they got that conclusion, but I know that was one story I heard with the black cat theory, that, you know, he was asking about, that they were witches, basically, and that's how they'd walk around.
Oh, I see. So, like, you know, and that's part of a group of, I wouldn't say it's superstition, but there's all kinds of other people out there that believe they're shapeshifters. And that there's, you know, they have these creatures that can change into other shapes and stuff like that. And that would be kind of thing. But talking about the Salem witch trials and going back to that, you know, I mean, of all the people that were burnt and sacrificed on, you know, and all that, how many of them were actually witches and doing anything wrong? Was it just the paranoia of the people? Or were these women doing something horribly wrong? I mean, I you know, and because of their So a guy would walk around and see a girl and be attracted to her and say, oh, she put a spell on me, I got a burner. I mean, really, was that the mindset?
I really
in
think that's
Salem,
where it originated
I know that
from.
They had a, well, Salem in particular, with them, they had a ergot poisoning in the wheat that they were growing. And basically that was more or less not lysergic acid, but a sister form of it. Basically, their wheat and everything was so tainted that it was basically hallucinogenic. They were... most people, including children, were tripping out. And you imagine, I mean, back then, unfortunately, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, we've grown up in a society, at least the United States, since the whatever, I mean, in modern civilization, we've had access to drugs, and we know what this is, we know what that is. Someone around the world knows how to synthesize it and take it, and it's unfortunately common knowledge to know what some of these things are. If you've, you know, heard of them, then you realize, oh, you know, if you saw someone nowadays running around acting crazy, you'd say, wow, that person's probably on whatever drug it is you could think. But if you're from some civilization that's a small village and children, everyone's freaking out, it's, you know, you're about your daily business, you're eating your food, and all of a sudden some kids run around screaming, foaming out the mouth, whatever it is, you imagine if you give someone 100 hits of acid, what would happen to them? And I'm not saying it was literally that much, but what they were eating through their food was certainly not helping them, and that, I think that's where the overwhelming witch scenario came from. And, you know, these people were acting crazy.
Okay,
they were all, you know, eating tainted food that was causing a hallucinogenic effect on them to a point they were, you know, going crazy. And they certainly,
yeah,
I would say, if I were back in a village, I'd say that's a witch, that's a werewolf, whatever it is. Let's get rid of that. That's kind of scared me.
Here's what I think about witches is like, I'll kind of act it out for you. Let me be the mayor of the town. Hey, all of our crops are dying. All the kids have got this black spot on them and then dying, and we don't know what's going on with it, so what should we do? I think it's that old crazy hag down there with the black cats. She's a witch, you know. Oh, you know what? That's a good idea. You know, let's say that she did it so the town stops freaking out. Let's blame that witch. Let's go down there and burn her, and everybody would just feel a lot better about this whole situation. Ah, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
You know,
that's pretty much
how the witches got the bad name. You know, they didn't have anyone else to point the finger at, so they just started doing it to young women and saying that they were the root of the problem, when in all reality, it's probably something else.
That was a good show, actually. One of the original Monty Pythons had that scene in there where they trying to destroy the witch, and they paint her all up and put a nose on her. It was great. That's kind of weird, though. Back then, they were, they were afraid of them for the wrong reasons, and now it seems we have entire areas and cultures dedicated to being witches, and you know it's perfectly fine, or it's accepted, and it's completely normal apparently. So, definitely different.
Well, they're not turning water into wine, and they're not making lead into gold. So, I don't know what they're really doing.
What are they doing?
Well,
exactly.
I think witch has been a term now that's not really used anymore. We have different, I mean, people, and they're totally different subjects. So people have brought up zombies. They've brought up now, like with whatever that god awful werewolf movie, vampire movie, that romantic.
Talking about,
you know,
Twilight? I love that.
Thank you.
That's my favorite show. That's my favorite movie. Not really.
Yep. But the idea of these different super, you know, natural things popping back up in popular media and culture, I think there will always be a finger to point at, which I think is just an antiquated term now. You know, it's not really used anymore. You know, there's not – we think of it, at least in the United States, a lot of people do, as a crazy old scary lady that lives somewhere and has warts on her nose and does some, you know, bizarre things in a pot, and somehow that means it's black magic. But what exactly is a witch? Does anyone really know? I mean, you can talk about it.
I've got a good idea. Like, okay, let's say back in the day, right, you know, women, they didn't really have rights. They were just looked upon as like the bear of the house and bear of the child. So maybe these attractive women were getting harassed constantly by these men in town, you know, and they had no other way. They couldn't fight them. They would lose. But what if they were just like, listen, buddy, if you don't leave me alone, I'm going to put a hex on you, and you're going to have, like, really bad stuff happen to you, and you better believe it. And if you don't, you know, like, just kind of like almost like an intimidation thing, because they didn't know what else to do. And so that's why there was these attractive women that were declared witches, or even maybe the father of them didn't want anybody messing with their daughter or anything like that. So they said, oh, she's special. Don't worry about her. Don't touch her. She'll put a curse on you. You know, I think it was could have been along that lines, too, for witches to develop.
Yeah, I think there was terms calling someone a witch, and then there was actually possibly someone being possessed and maybe being something that would have literal effects on them. Like if you look at the Salem thing, you know, if people are hallucinating, taking mass amounts of some type of compound through their food that is causing them to hallucinate, then that's one thing. But if it's, like you mentioned, a good-looking woman and all this is going on around you, it's like, you know, they don't want to have familiar relations with you, then all of a sudden, hey, that's a witch. And, you know, I guess that was a good excuse. It was the old-time version of divorce, maybe, but that's kind of crazy that people were able to just get away with it. And I liked your opinion, though. I think that would be a good tactic up until the point that someone who has power says, hey, that lady said that she's a witch and that she's going to put a spell on me, so you guys have to go kill her.
Yeah, basically, like, hey, she's the problem. It's not anything else. But, you know, you're right about the drug hallucinogenic thing. I mean, you can eat bad fruit and bad food, and believe me, they used to do that back in the day because they didn't have very many options. And if it didn't kill you, it's fine. But bad fruit and bad food can make you hallucinate. Like, you know, it's not good for you. So, I mean, that could have been. It may not have necessarily been drugs, but, yeah, definitely bad food to make you see things that aren't really there. And then, you know, honestly, I think things get really messed up by word of mouth, too. Like, somebody tells somebody, hey, this girl, she put a hex on him. The next thing you know, it's this girl. And so word of mouth really messes stuff up, too.
Look up the ear god poisoning that they had out there. That's in Salem. If you type it in, they've proven it. They've found however they did, they were able to go back and find samples and everything of what actually was going on there and everything that grew. But they certainly had some tainted food that was causing effects on them. And it's really cool to read about because it's happened all over throughout the – it's a common thing that can happen. It's happened throughout the entire world where wheat grows. So it's not just some magical thing.
Well, let's get on to what we mentioned earlier, change the subject just a bit. What about this whole zombie thing? Why is it in the last 20 years have we seen nothing but zombie movie after zombie movie after zombie movie? And could this be preparation, or is this just something that could be done biologically or on purpose or something like that? Could we come down with something? There's been some speculation in the news about certain bacteria getting into people's brains and causing them to be delirious. And
I've read about that, yeah. And like, you know, small ponds and lakes, or just small ponds.
Yeah, and they're right. Well, I mean, they're finding, you know, differences now in certain creatures that live out in the wild, especially amphibians and things like that. But the parasites that get into the bees and certain other things that could be damaging, you know, to the nervous system, to other functions. But why is it that everyone's so interested in zombies? What's going on?
I could tell you. The thing
George
is, people are fascinated by being scared. You know, I mean, real zombie situations were smallpox, the Black Plague, you know, all these other viruses and stuff out there that just wiped out a lot of people. So that's embedded in our DNA, in our mind. We lived through that. That actually happened. People died. So we're constantly always going to be scared about that because it could happen again. But the zombies is just so much better of a way to express a virus than them laying on a couch and coughing and dying slowly. This virus reenacts your mind and makes you go crazy. So really, it's just us feeding into our natural fears of pandemic, of virus and bacteria. That's where zombies
right.
are. Well, yeah, you watch a movie like The Road, sorry to interrupt you, or read the book like The Road, where everyone's dying and you know, there's no food and you know it's horrible everywhere. Everyone's coughing and dying and stabbing and looting. And you know, that's one scenario of a virus. The other scenario is, oh, it's a magical virus where you suddenly only your the only way to kill you is to shoot you in the head through your brainstem and kill you, but you can still run around somehow and eat people, and you only want human warm human flesh. And
right,
it's
right.
An awesome Hollywood scenario. And we actually got a caller on the line right now, so I'll go ahead and let them on. And we only got about 4 minutes left, so whoever's calling, hopefully
ooh,
we can make this a quick question.
Yeah.
Hello?
Hi, how's it going?
Hi, how are you? So I hear you guys are talking about all this, you know, all these zombies, right? I just want to know, like, what's your opinion? Like, do you think the population of America or just the entire universe, planet, will turn to zombies?
No. I think that there's a possible scenario where you might see certain sectors of population come down with something that is unknown to modern science, or that is modern science has created on its own for the very purpose of population reduction. So it's really hard to say whether or not where they would use these sort of weaponized things. But the idea is that, yeah, if you were to come down and be sick, why would you just want to eat other people or blood or something like that? I'm not for sure what kind of virus or what kind of biological attack would actually cause people to act like zombies, but could it be
I
that,
mean, rabies does, kind of, but rabies isn't super contagious.
Right.
I'll just state my opinion real quick, and I'm going to go, because you guys only have a couple minutes left. But what I'll say about zombies is I don't think they have a real scenario of them attacking you and all that will actually happen. I mean, there's been, like, some scientific stuff about keeping the brain alive after death, but nothing real solid. I do believe that a virus could spread that could be a lot worse than getting bit. It travels through the air and it just travels through mosquitoes and all that stuff. But anyways, thanks for having me on, and I'll see you guys later.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Good question. Yeah. Go ahead, Max.
No, I mean, I'd really hope not. No, I don't really have a particular opinion. I'm not too caught up in the health and everything. But with the Zika, however you say it, virus going on, and then there's swine flu, there's always a virus going on. So there's certainly a scenario, I think, that there could be mass infestation or a pandemic that goes around the United States. But I don't necessarily believe that would manifest itself as flesh-eating zombies. But that works good for Hollywood movies and video games, it turns out, for a pretty cool time. But, we only got a couple minutes left, but I appreciate the call, and that was just kind of my take on it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I was going to say, did you have any thoughts or opinions on these zombie situation yourself?
No, just once after they actually controlled the Ebola kind of thing, and, there's a big scare about it, that there's people coming back to life or whatever, That was kind of a big scare to me, but that was a while ago. So I was just wondering, what your guys' opinions are on it and stuff. So thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, no problem.
I was going to say, because you'll find all kinds of stuff in the media, scaring people, this, that, and the other thing. But, like I said, could it be something that is done on purpose? Because, if it was something that you would think that was natural or just happened to be a virus or a bacteria that was unknown, what would really be the outcome and something like that? So, it's one of those things. Like, I think people are scared about that because they know they're subject,
60 seconds left. So.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, hate to interrupt, but I appreciate the call. And, we'll be doing another show in the next couple of days. So please tune in, same time. And we'll definitely, whatever you want to talk about.
All right, cool. Thank you.
Yep, have a good
one. Yeah. Zombies, I really think that there's a reason why it's been pushed so much, to be honest.
Hey,
there's something going on.
Hey, to interrupt you, Roddy, we only got about 30 seconds, so the intro music will kick in momentarily. I can't control it, but just want to say thanks for doing a good show, and as always, we'll do another one in a couple days, and sorry if we missed anyone on the lines, but you and got 5 seconds if you want to say goodbye, Roddy.
All right, well, have a good one. Keep looking up. And
later, guys.
Stay safe and look out for new zombies. Bye. Yeah, so zombies.
Always. Gotta have the zombie subject. But, we'll see you next time, guys. Thank you.